that's almost being a food vendor, even though you're not charging for it, but you are vending food to the public in order to sell your product, but you're still selling that product there at the event. So I want to be careful that we don't interfere or restrict something like that.
All right. Chris Bausch, you had a comment on that?
Well, we talked about a variety of ideas. As Mr. Gregory said, we talked about having it in parking lots. I think somebody mentioned City Hall parking lot, the train depot parking lot, having it, like you said, where Farmers Market is now. Some of the areas that we got kind of hung up on and wanted to redirect back to council or planning commission, who would actually run it?
Yeah, maintain, organize
did
it.
We didn't want to volunteer city staff. Did we want to have something like Farmers Market staff? Did we want to have a lottery system, you know, where people, or food truck vendors that wanted to participate, where they put their name in a hat and we picked out five or six of them to operate? How often would we want to have it? Is this once a week? Is this once a month? Once a quarter?
Yeah, that's what I think maybe direction to staff would be, to maybe come up with a policy on how that might be
correct
administered in lottery systems, for instance, in rotation, so just like we do for a tow truck type of thing.
We chickened out and we didn't want to come back and tell you how to do it.
So okay. There's something else that hasn't been said yet, and that is a food truck court.
Yes.
Which has been offered up by a couple people, but that's into a different conversation. And once you get a food truck court, all these questions will go away, because that's where the food truck operators are going to go.
Right, I understand, but again, in particular to this item right now, within 100 feet of the park, that's why I'm bringing it up. And so for right now, what I'm hearing from council anyway is that we're all pretty good with this 100-foot buffer, correct? Yeah, okay.
I think the exception would be, there'd be a couple of exceptions. Obviously, you know, we have New Year's Eve coming up. We're going to have food trucks downtown for New Year's Eve. So there's going to be built-in exceptions. If we do a food truck court, an occasional food truck court, would there be an exception? There's an exception for Farmers Market. So those things have to be taken into consideration. But yes, by and large, a 100-foot
buffer.
So just to be clear, those types of things are special events that have their own type of permits versus things that would be governed by this scheme that we're working on.
Right. Okay.
Mr. Hammond?
Or Tim.
And there's a volunteer in the audience that wants to operate these special events or food trucks.
Okay, there's several out there that can help staff.
David's not doing anything. We could volunteer David.
I have one final general comment.
Sure, go ahead, Fred.
I would like to compliment this city. I would like to compliment our ad hoc. I would like to compliment our staff on once again being what Paso Robles is uniquely doing in many areas, and that is being the tip of the spear for the entire state of California.
Yeah.
And pioneering this particular subject.
Yeah, didn't realize that Paul Patty was doing that with the county level. So, yeah, Chris.
And I'd like to make just some general comments also. So I, you know, want to thank city staff for bringing on the concurrent translations for this process, both for the council meeting and the ad hoc meeting. I know that this was a lot of work to do all of the behind the scenes work to try to harmonize things and figure out what the solutions are, work with the ad hoc, take all of the public comment, and then feed that in. But I think the process was so valuable because there was, through the public engagement, there was real ground truthing about like what works, what doesn't. It's just so much easier to talk to people that are, you know, familiar with the business and can offer feedback. I thought the ad hoc itself was respectful, curious, and really solution oriented to try to come up with the best solution for this situation. So I appreciate everyone's time. Also for the audience, you know, the point of all this is we want things to be safe. We want them to be fire safe. We want to make sure that we're not polluting the waters of the state. We want to make sure we have, you know, property owners' permission. Those are all reasonable, right? That is all reasonable to expect that. And that is our responsibility as a city, to make sure that there are rules for that. The trick is, what's the exact limit of the rule, right? Because that then is how things are enforced. Because I can speak in a general way, oh, we don't want you to be draining into, you know, the creek, but you have to have something in place, a metric, a trigger that would say, okay, this is in compliance or this is not. Because in the end, we have to enforce it, right? So that everybody's safe, so that the rules are safe across the board, between businesses. And that's why this seems so complicated. But in the end, I think we're gonna have a really good result. So I thought our ad hoc committee was very thoughtful, asked great questions, that the staff was great. I thought the community was great. I think it's a good lesson in good governance. And congratulations.
So one of the last question here real quick, I wanted to kind of run by, and I think I heard pretty much a consensus that staff is asking, is council interested in committing necessary city resources, including staffing and administration, use of facilities, streets, and to support a development of operation of a regularly scheduled food truck event. So I think personally for me, I'd like to see something come back with that, to see really if we want to get behind that, such an event organized kind of a thing, or rather maybe have some public input where they can maybe run it as well. What's the consensus? Everybody thumbs up on that too, that we can have them come back afterwards?
Sure.
Yeah, I kind of agree too.
Can I make a comment real quick?
You bet, go ahead.
So so this is a pretty wide, diverse, I don't think it was very too conflicting, but it was just a lot of information. And I just want to compliment Katie and Piper for driving the bus and getting us here. Thank you. And it made it, the process was nice because we identified all the issues that were concerning. We addressed all those issues tonight. It's pretty clear. And I think we're in a place to move forward. So.
Okay. Warren, is that pretty good? I mean, do you have any further comments, or do you think you have enough at this point?
So I think what we'd like a motion, basically. It sounds like we have consensus on the items here on the screen. So those are the operational requirements that go into effect immediately. And then the second part is the zone changes. So like we said, that's going back to Planning Commission. It sounds like, you know, there's a lot of interest in making sure there's a process where one TUP can cover multiple sites, and the ability to rely on county documents. So we'll consider that as we do that update process. So I think if we could get a motion basically to accept what's on the screen plus those two notes, I think we can move that forward. And then it sounds like you want to report back on options for some sort of city
event.
Sponsored event, and right. We can just bring that back as a separate item.
So
can
moved.
Can you back up? Well, let's back up again. Let's read that on the other slide you had there, Warren. There it is. So that's the motion that he wants us to go ahead and...
So I move what Warren said is we adopt what's... or move a motion to accept what's on the screen, and then 3 and 4 to go through the planning commission process.
Okay, motion by Gregory, second by Bausch. Discussion? Okay, we'll call for the question, Melissa.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming tonight, too.
So, appreciate it. What, can I make one more comment?
Yes.
So, Warren, and I don't know if you can get with staff on this, but I think the enforcement question is important to address that.
And I think as we come back with the TUP amendments, we can clarify that as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I take a break?
Let's just, we've been going for a while, so we'll do a 10-minute break.
Thank you.
Thank you.
AM 1230, KPRL and 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
The Hindenburg was an engineering masterpiece. An airship as large and as grand as the Titanic. And as doomed. Built by the Zeppelin Company in Germany during the 1930s. And at a time when flying a passenger plane across the Atlantic was a difficult and perilous journey. The great dirigibles crossed the ocean with serene and effortless grace. But the popularity of the Hindenburg was clouded in political controversy. Funds for its construction had come in large part from Germany's Nazi party. The United States, which controlled the only natural deposits of helium in the world, denied the Zeppelin Company access to this valuable gas. As a result, the Hindenburg was inflated with hydrogen, a far more flammable substance. In 1936 alone, the great airship traveled 10 times across the Atlantic without incident. The afternoon of May 6th, 1937, promised to be no different.
Well, here it comes, ladies and gentlemen. We're out now outside of the hangar, and what a great sight it is. A thrilling one.
On hand to record the arrival of the Hindenburg at Lakehurst Naval Air Station in New Jersey that day was a young Chicago radio reporter named Herb Morrison. Instead, Morrison helped radio to broadcast one of modern history's great disasters as it suddenly unfolded in all its terrible glory.
The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It burst into flames. Get it started. It's rising terrible. Oh, my. Get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring fast, and all the folks between that this is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, four or 500 feet into the sky, and it's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and the flames now, and the frame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the passengers screaming around here. I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen.
Lakehurst, New Jersey. The German dirigible Hindenburg is on fire. How serious is the blaze cannot be determined at this time, but it is reported that the entire ship is involved. This bulletin is from the Press Radio Bureau.
35 passengers died in the explosion of the Hindenburg. Perhaps more incredibly, a few passengers survived. What caused the ship to ignite remains speculative to this day. What is certain is that the explosion signaled the death knell of the passenger airship industry. But even as Herb Morrison's eyewitness report that day chronicled the end of one era, it signaled the beginning of another. An age in which electronic media would routinely report shocking events in the moment that they occurred.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Welcome to Heroes of the Air. True stories of those who flew for America and earned the nation's supreme military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Heroes of the Air is brought to you by the Air Force Association, an independent nonprofit aerospace organization which promotes public understanding of the role aerospace power plays in our national defense. Your host for Heroes of the Air is Gene Pell. The invasion of North Africa was underway, but Allied commanders led by General Dwight Eisenhower were still in the dark about what to expect from military leaders of Vichy France, who were in control of the North African coast and interior. Would they resist the American offensive, or would they agree not to fight? One way to find out was to try and talk with them. And toward that end, two Army Air Corps officers, Colonel Demas T. Craw and Major Pierpont H. Hamilton, volunteered to go ashore with the first landing wave, make their way behind enemy lines, and attempt to reach the local French commander. Near Port Leode, French Morocco, November 8, 1942. Colonel Craw's request was first refused as being too dangerous, but upon his insistence that he was qualified to undertake and accomplish the mission, he was allowed to go, accompanied by Major Hamilton and an enlisted driver. They encountered heavy fire while in the landing boat and were unable to dock in the river as planned because of shell fire from shore batteries. They finally succeeded in landing on the beach while under constant strafing at low levels from three enemy planes. They boarded a jeep and began making their way toward the French commander's headquarters, some 5 miles distant. Their progress was now impaired by fire from the guns of American naval ships. Within a short distance of their objective, a sudden and sustained burst of machine gun fire erupted from a concealed position, and Colonel Craw was instantly killed, his companions taken into custody as POWs by French forces. Major Hamilton managed to complete the mission, urged the French commander to declare an armistice, and learned 2 days later that the commander's superiors had indeed agreed to do so. For their conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity in action above the call of duty, Army Air Corps Colonel Demas T. Craw and Major Pierpont M. Hamilton were awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor.
The Air Force Association is proud to bring you Heroes of the Air, dedicated to those who earned the nation's highest military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Their service and sacrifice reflect an ideal that puts others and country above self. AFA salutes all men and women in the Air Force who so selflessly serve our country each day at home and around the globe. Heroes of the Air is produced by Pelcom Communications in association with Radio America.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
When I was young, I'd listen to the radio, waiting for my favorite songs. When they played, I'd sing along. It made me smile. Those were such happy times, and not so long ago. How I wondered where they'd gone. But they're back again, just like a long lost friend. All the songs I love so well. Every sha-la-la-la, every woe-woe still shines.
yesterday once more.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL. AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton. Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will resume in just a moment. You're listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton.
Reconvene. We're back on schedule here for item two, San Luis Obispo Council of Governments supplemental funding overview and draft expenditure plan. City Manager Cruz, who are
you? Thank you, Mayor. Yes, as you all know, SLOCOG is our regional transportation agency. They, in part, do our long-range regional transportation planning. They do funding allocation of various funds that the region receives, and they coordinate both with the county and the seven incorporated cities on these matters. Of course, we're represented as a member on that board and in that organization. Councilmember Strong is our representative. And I won't steal too much of their thunder, but I will say that for the last many months, SLOCOG has been having ongoing community dialogue and discussion around transportation funding. And that discussion has really revolved around the look at what if the region had additional local funding resources at its disposal, mainly through a potential half-cent sales tax that would be focused directly on transportation needs in the county. And so here tonight with us, we have several members of the SLOCOG team and Kendall Flint with DKS Associates, who's going to be walking through a presentation. And tonight's item, as I believe she will explain, is to really get your feedback and your input on work that the SLOCOG and their board have been doing. There's no decision or inflection point tonight. It's simply receiving a file and to get the council's feedback and the walkthrough, I'm sure, the timeline and what the future holds with discussion. So with that, I will turn it over to Ms. Flint for the presentation.
Thank you so much. And again, it's my pleasure to be here tonight, Mr. Mayor. Nice to see you again, council members. As many of you know, I've been actually attached to this particular effort since 2016. We're very excited to talk with you tonight about what has changed. I'm trying to turn this, I'm moving along. Ah, there we go. Sorry, I went ahead of myself. First of all, for those of you that don't know, SLOCOG is the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. Their function is really to work with all of the cities in San Luis Obispo County, as well as the county itself, and to develop a proactive approach to funding transportation investments throughout the county. And that includes both local and regional pieces that are there. We have an elected board of 12 members. That is one member from each of the city councils. Councilmember Strong represents the city of Paso Robles. We have five members from the Board of Supervisors, and then again, all of the other council members that are there. Their job is really to represent the region and make sure that each of us are really getting the most of what we can get. One of the challenges that San Luis Obispo County has is a lack of funding. There are currently 25 counties in California that are called self-help counties. They get half-cent sales tax, or in some cases a different percentage, but that money allows them to fund regional projects. As many of you know, here in San Luis Obispo County, we have a number of major projects that are currently unfunded. There's a four-mile stretch in South County along 101 that is funded, but really none of the other projects that we're looking at has that long-term funding. Specifically here in North County, we're looking at that 46-101 connection, a lot of those other things. In order to make that happen, we would have to have an additional revenue stream in order to access both state and federal funds in order to actually bring those things to reality. Now, right now, if you look, you can see that our state transportation funds have been going steadily down. That is not good. Part of that is due to the reduction in funds from gas tax. Some of that is people just not driving as much anymore because it's very expensive. Some of it is because the proliferation of electric vehicles. But in general, you can see from 2018 to 2026, we're getting less than half of what we got previously. So when you combine that with our additional needs, you can see there's definitely some challenges. Now, right now, when you look here at our current transportation sales taxes, you're seeing we're not getting the right amount. And so right now, SLO is not seeing any of these transportation sales tax revenues, which our neighbors are in Santa Barbara, in Santa Cruz, and other places. In the 2016 election, some of you may remember, San Luis Obispo County did try for a measure. It came this close. We lost about 440 votes. But at that same time, both Santa Cruz and Monterey successfully passed measures. And I'm going to talk a little about what that meant for them. When you look at this graph, Santa Cruz County over that last 10-year period has collected about $196 million, Monterey $277, and during that same period, Santa Barbara almost $500 million. When you take that money, what's really important about it is the ability to leverage that, to take those funds and use it to match for grants that are available at both the state and federal level. And you can see here, which is sad but true, San Luis Obispo County, by not passing a measure in 2016, did not see any of that revenue. Conservatively, we would have lost out on about $270 million. And if you look at what others have been able to do with leveraging, probably another $430 million in terms of what we could have done in terms of grant funding. So it's a substantial amount of money that was not brought into this region because we don't have a sales tax. And you can see these other folks have been really successful with that. So over the last literally decade, SLOCOG staff as well as member agencies have been constantly meeting with folks, but very consistently in the last 18 months, 2 years, we've been really looking at what things people want to see in the local measure. More than 70 public meetings. We did a series of focus groups. We've done some polling that I'll show you in a moment. But really looking at all these different things of what people wanted. And what we heard overwhelmingly is that local agencies, the cities and the residents therein, want more local control over what they do. So as an example, in the 2016 measure, there was percentages that were set aside for things like bike lanes and pedestrian. And what we learned is that that's great in some cities, and in other cities, they want to spend more money on other things. So one of the things we did this time around is say, look, why don't we make this a little more flexible so that the local city has control over how they're going to spend their money, and they can use that to the highest and best use. Now, what we also found in the polling, which was just conducted this last fall, is that 76% of voters or potential voter residents think that there's a great need for funding for transportation in the area. 74% thinks that their specific area that they live in has that need. And when we're talking about that, it's things like not only their local streets and roads, but again, it's those regional projects that are coming up, safe routes to schools, all these other pieces. Now, we also found that if we talk to folks about what could possibly happen, in order to make this work, we have to pass the measure at 2/3. That's state law, and that's the way that it works with SLOCOG putting that measure forward. Before, we just told about what was happening, 61% of the possible voters thought that perhaps yes would be their vote. Once they learned about how the funds might be spent, that number went up to 65%. Now, this does have a margin of error of about 3%. And I also want to remind people that when you do these types of surveys, you're on the phone with someone or online for, you know, 15, 20 minutes. So this is a very brief conversation. What I'm going to go over with you tonight really hasn't been presented to the public. They have not seen this yet. So in the next, say, 9 months, that's going to be the job of SLOCOG, the consultant teams, and our local agencies to let people know what's in it. And you can see there that if we do tell them about what is positive in this, what that means for their communities, we do see closer to 65% in terms of passage. So what's different? Number one, we're talking about an average of $35 million a year that would be brought in by this tax. Now, this is a half cent on anything that you purchase, scarves, going out to a restaurant, buying a car, buying a refrigerator, all those types of things that we spend money on every day. I think it's really important to also note this tax is paid for also by visitors that come to this area, specifically people that are coming here to drink wine or to stay in our hotels or to go visit family and friends. The current plan has 55% of that money going to local agencies. That means the seven cities and the county itself. Each is getting a percentage based on population. Now, as your city manager knows, there were numerous conversations with the city managers group as well as the county administrator about what's the best way to do this. And different agencies do it in different manners: road miles, population, sales tax. At the end of the day, the city managers and the council, this county administrator really came to, let's keep it at population. That's the fairest. That seems like something we can really adjust and make sense to everyone. Everyone will get their percentage, and then I'll talk about it in a moment how they can use it. It can be for safe routes to schools. It can be used for bike lanes. It can be used for pedestrian, fixing potholes, road maintenance, wayfinding, anything that you want to do within the community. It's also can be used for things like transportation or transit services. So if PASA wanted to put in a trolley, you could use funds for that. If you wanted to supplement existing transit services that serve your community, you could use it for that. So it really is quite flexible in what people can and can't do. Now, the next biggest chunk, obviously, is the 40% that goes to regional corridor improvements. Now, for this particular pot, what we learned in 2016 is that some of our smaller communities, particularly in the unincorporated areas, were concerned that they were not getting their fair share of funds, or potentially not getting their fair share of funds as they come in. So the opportunity here was to basically break out the county into four subregions, and then again by population to separate out these funds by subregion. So as an example, you're in the North County region, and that means that basically the Tascadero, Paso, and your local communities would get their percentage chunk of funding that could be used, again, for things like the 46101. It could be used for interchanges, all those major projects and programs. Ditto for our friends at the North Coast, Central Coast, and South County, so that each region would be able to come up with plans and projects that they want to have incorporated. Now, important to note, all of these projects, the regional projects, would come before the SLOCOG board. All of the projects would have to be included in the most recently adopted capital improvement program and also the most recent regional transportation program, which is being adopted as we speak. And that's largely to make sure that these plans and these funds are supporting infrastructure investments that have been planned for. You know, it's not like, ooh, we got some money, let's go do that. And what's really important about these funds, and some people have said, well, it's a little less, why? $35 million, $14 million a year, that sounds like a lot of money, but when you're talking about these major projects, it's really not that much in the big picture. What we normally see these funds being used for is what we call making things shovel ready, which means all the planning projects, doing the environmental review, making sure that they are ready to go so that they can move on to that next portion of the program. Now, if you look here, you'll see this is just a look at the percentages of funds. So you can see here in Paso Robles, Paso's got one of the largest population bases. Paso would see about $2.1 million per year that could be used for local roads. And then within that, North County, almost $5 million that would go to the regional piece. Likewise, you can see as they all break down. Now, in the unincorporated areas, one of the things we are hearing, and I'd love to hear Council's reaction tonight, one of the things we're hearing from folks is that there may be a request to take the unincorporated, which is the county, and also split that out by these regions, right, so that everybody knows that they're going to get something out of it. If we break it much further down, it starts to become challenging to take track up and also challenging to actually do anything meaningful. But that's one of the things that's kind of floating out there. We expect to hear from the county on that. If you look at the bottom here, we also see 4% for senior, disabled, and veteran mobility improvements. One of the things we found, not only in this poll, but in the 2024 poll and previous ones over the last 10 years, is people want to see specific set-asides to improve funding for those folks that are disabled or have other challenges over and above. So that's why there's a set-aside specific for that, and that can be anything from point-to-point services, on-demand services, supplemental services to existing lines that are already there, but that's specific for that subset of folks within our transit-dependent community. And that was really heavily supported by voters in all the previous polls, as much as like three times as much as we would see for regular. Administrative costs are capped at 1%. You may say, well, what are they doing? They're not hiring more people, I assure you. But what they are doing is making sure that there's opportunities to really get transparent about this stuff. So SLOCOG and its staff would be responsible for a couple things. One, fielding the community the community oversight, citizens oversight group, which would be one representative from each of the cities, as well as one from each supervisorial district. And they would be constantly looking at how the money was spent. That also comes back to the local agencies, right? So each city or the county gets money as they're coming in, and they have to report back and where that money was spent. So that the voters, this is a contract, the voters know that you got X million dollars and you spent it on this, that, or the other, and there are receipts to back that up. So that you can't use it for police, fire, parks. And these are all wonderful things, but they're not what the measure was intended for. Also, one really important comment about this is that these are funds that are used to enhance or supplement existing. So the city already has a certain amount of money that it sets aside each year from your general fund that's used for local road maintenance. You can't supplant those funds. You can't trade those out for the tax revenue, right? It has to be on top of that to increase the amount of funds that you have available. Likewise, developers or anyone that comes to Paso or anywhere else in San Luis Obispo County will continue to have to pay their fair share. They can't be offset by the tax revenue. So it really is intended to enhance and expand the amount of money that can be used. Now, as far as the oversights and guarantees, the other thing that the SLOCOG team will be doing is in working with that Citizens Oversight Committee, producing annual reports that show how the money was spent, what projects were funded, all those different things. And those will actually, as part of the ordinance, be made bilingual, because we do have a substantial number of folks in the county that don't speak just English. They speak English or Spanish. So that's part of it. I think the most important thing about all these safeguards is really making sure that, again, it's incredibly transparent. These are best practices that are used by other self-help counties, and a few that are unique to San Luis Obispo County. Again, we're asking that the local agencies have, for example, a capital improvement program, that they have a pavement management program, that they are having meetings with the public to let them know when you do your budget, how you're planning on spending your measure funds each year, so they have an opportunity to weigh in. Now, in terms of what the cost is going to be, the average person is going to spend about $2.31 a week. Again, you're not taxing housing, you're not taxing medical equipment, you're not taxing groceries like you normally don't. It's basic things that you do every day, right? And so it really kind of depends on the person or the household as to where they're spending their funds, if it's more or if it's less. But that's basically the average, around $2.31 a day. Or a week, sorry. So what we're in the midst of doing right now, the SLOCOG board did convene last week, yes. And they did approve this plan in concept. And so what we're doing right now is going out to each of the jurisdictions as well as the county and asking if folks are good with this, if there are suggestions or changes you'd like to have the board consider. And then after going through that process, we come back in February to the SLOCOG board and present an updated ordinance and an expenditure plan. And I believe both of those, actually the expenditure plan is in your packages tonight. And then after that, if they choose to move forward, then they would be asking each of the member agencies to actually take a vote, which we're not doing tonight, but you'd come back and say, okay, we're for this or not for this in toto, which would be the ordinance and oversight, all the other things that are built into it. If those all go as planned, then somewhere around April, we would come back to the SLOCOG board, and they would request that the County Board of Supervisors place this measure on the November ballot. If they choose to do that, then the November ballot rolls out. We are all in the business of education. We can tell people what's in the measure, what it will mean, but we are not in advocating one way or the other. We're just saying this is what it is or this is what is not in there. If it goes forward to that, then in November 3rd, the voters of the county will have an opportunity to weigh in on that. It would require a 2/3 vote in order for it to pass. If it does pass, then funds would start to be collected in 2027 as of April 1st, and the measure would last for 30 years. At any time during that process, if the county or anybody wanted to make a change to that, they'd have to go back out to the voters. But we have built into the measure a 10-year outreach that every 10 years we'd come back and say, hey, are we missing something? And people are laughing, but they're actually testing flying cars at my airport. So who knows? You might want to say we want to include flying cars as something you can spend money on a port, whatever that might be. But it's in order to adjust to make sure that the measure is still meeting the needs of the county and your local residents. And then furthermore, as we go through this process, we're actually making sure that, you know, the measure is, again, completely transparent. Everybody can see where the money went, and they can see on an annual basis what it meant for them and their communities. And I think with that, yes, I'm available to answer any questions you might have about the contents of the measure, the expectations for what the cities will be doing, or what the next steps will be.
Thank you. Council, any questions of SLOCOG? Chris Bausch.
So thank you, Really fast. The 40% regional corridor funds, those are subject to review.
Yes.
The 55% local road repairs, are those subject to slow cogs review?
No. So your percentage, and I think I mentioned, was about $5 million a year. So that is completely up to the city council to spend as you see fit. With the input of the public, there is a provision in the measure that says you have to have public outreach, you have to let people know what you're doing. And provided that it fits within any of the listed uses, which are quite broad, again, you can do local street and road maintenance, you can do bike, ped, safe routes to schools, wayfinding, anything that relates to transportation. Now, if you wanted to, perhaps you have a project that you want to work on with, hypothetically, Atascadero for a regional something, you could do that as well. You have complete control over those funds, provided, again, they're used for transportation.
Can they be banked year to year?
I mean, yes.
And accrue those funds for a large project?
When you have a large project on the regional side, there is a provision in there that you have to use certain funds. If you're going with a regional project, you have to use those funds in a certain timeline. So if you've applied for funds and said, we're going to use that for, I'm going to use 46101, let's say it's an environmental review, you'd have 5 to 7 years in order to complete that, right? No. But hypothetically, if you didn't need your money 1 year and Atascadero did, you can actually do interagency swaps through an MOU, correct?
Fred, question?
For instance, this would be local funds only. And then there's the other 40% that is regional.
Correct.
Right? So we have, for instance, some projects we're interested in as a city, including the bridge over Highway 46 at Union Road, or under it, one or the other. That would be a connection to a state highway. So that would be a regional project, correct?
Yes, but if the city, if for whatever reason the city decided that it wanted to allocate some of its local funds to help bolster that, you could do that.
Okay, but we could also have SOCOG with their 40% portion of the county.
Yes.
And state handled most of it.
Yes, but I want to be clear that project, because we worked on that as well, that's got a rather large price tag. So mm-hmm. What you're probably looking at, again, is all the planning and other things that go up to getting it ready, and then SOCOG together with all of the county and everybody
but
else.
That's when we go for grants.
Yes, correct. Yes, yes.
Magnify it.
Yep.
Right. Thank you.
Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah. Thank you for your presentation. So I have a question. On the 40%,
mm-hmm.
How would you allocate the county money to the communities that you talked about doing, possibly?
Same way that we're doing it for the local, which will be by population. So the population in any one of those regions, and let me just back that up if I can so you can see what that looks like. Okay, so each one of those regions, it's not just the unincorporated area, it's including the cities, right? So for your area, which is North County, it would include the city of Paso Robles, the city of Atascadero, as well as all of the communities that are in the unincorporated areas, which in this case was San Miguel, Creston, Santa Margarita, Shandon, and Templeton.
Could you go to slide 11, please?
Bless you.
Okay, so I guess that's my specific question, and that's my recommendation to bring back. But so there's $8.4 million to spread or potentially spread those funds to the individual communities in the North County.
So what we're hearing, and again, that's what I'm asking for your input. What we've heard from the county is that the preference from the local agent, the local communities like Shandon, okay, they would rather see that money allocated in the same way that the regional is to those communities by region to make sure that each of these smaller subsets actually gets a share. And we're preparing language to that effect. We're just kind of waiting to hear what everybody else says back. But that's one of the things on the table. The other thing that I just wanted to point out, for example, if Oceano decided to incorporate as a city, then they would go right into that mix and their percentages would be worked into the tables as well. And the percentage by population would be updated by census every 10 years, or in case of a newly incorporated city, it would be updated at that time.
So the 4.9 million would be the 40% of the money to be shared with the North County cities, correct?
Well, so that 4.9 million, that's for the regional projects, right? So that's already set aside. So that would be, for example, to Councilmember Strong's point, that could be for the 46 Bridge or 46101, right? The 8.4 million in unincorporated, that right now is one pot of local roads that would be controlled by the county. But what we're hearing from the county, from the community advisory commissions and others out there, they'd like to see that perhaps also divided by region.
Thank you.
Okay. Councilman Beal.
Great presentation. Thank you. I appreciate how a few things have shifted in this iteration, the fact that there are different buckets of money, that it seems like kind of the equity issue has been addressed. Also, cities have some agency to work within their own planning and priorities that they've developed, so I think that's great. I want to go back to kind of the leveraging and matching piece. So can we go back to those slides?
Yeah. I'm going to take you back to where the what others have done.
Yeah. I mean, I think this deserves some time, right? There are projects that we probably are not even eligible for because we don't have enough matching to be competitive.
You're absolutely right. So in the state of California, under SB 1, which was adjusted in 2016, there are several hundred million dollars every year that are only allocated to self-help counties. There are 25 self-help counties right now representing about 88% of the population of California. You're not eligible for those funds. And what you'll see, not only from state funds, and this applies to Safe Routes to Schools, there's all of them, as well as some of the federal. And we have had questions about that. I mean, regardless of where you are in the administration, federal funds for highways have existed for decades and will continue. So the anticipation is that they will continue to be a source of revenue for agencies like SLOCOG that can leverage these funds. And what we can see, this is just over the last 10 years, your neighbors have done a very good job of doing that. Stanislaus County took $120,000 and turned that into $140 million. And that's for the SR 132 project, which was now halfway complete. So yeah, without those matching funds, the odds of completing some of the marquee projects, including 46101, also 101 South, I mean, many of you drive down there as well, and you know the thrill of hitting the 101 right at sunset when all the tourists are going, and it's like a dead stop, right? There's a lot of improvements that can be made. 227, 41, 46. There are a multitude of things that could be helped by regional funds that we just can't address without an additional revenue stream.
Right, so it basically multiplies the dollars that it can actually be spent on different projects. It right. lets us invest both locally and on these kind of regional corridor projects. And I think it's important for people to understand the scale. Like when we're talking about some of these, you called them a marquee project, and correct me, but we're talking million, tens of millions of dollars.
Hundreds
of millions to be improving some of these intersections, some of these key kind of points, when quite honestly we hear about that all the time, and that would really improve the quality of life of our residents.
Well, and for perspective, the current regional transportation plan, when it projects out all the things that you and other agencies have put together, when you look at what the cost of that is to deliver on those projects, and we're just talking about the basics, right? There's a $2.3 billion shortfall in what we can do. A measure like this over a 30-year period potentially closes that gap. The other thing to keep in mind is that for local agencies, the cost of deferred maintenance, in other words, every time you're not repaving a street or not taking care of it, actually, Annie was joking with me, because Annie Boesky is awesome, by the way. I use the analogy of dentistry. You know, if you go to the dentist all the time, no problem. You let stuff go, then it's a root canal. And roads are the same way. You can get away with regular maintenance at a relatively affordable cost, but if you let it go, it's just gonna cost more. And the longer you wait, the more that cost goes up. And we are seeing that with reduced pavement condition index throughout the county. And while we have some of the newer develops here in Paso where, you know, people are playing in a mellow ruse, that's great, but you know from driving these roads, there's some of our older areas, older communities that do not have that same situation, and therefore they have some real challenges. So these things all come together.
I think Mr. Hewitt had a couple words on kind of the scale of some of these projects, scope.
Thank you, Councilmember. So for instance, the overcrossing and the auxiliary bridge that we were looking at for Union Road at Airport Road, Union Road area at 46, you're looking in the neighborhood of $100 million plus for those two bridges. I think in your last budget cycle, we allocated about $3 million in local funds to try to push the state along to show that, hey, as a local agency, we're doing what we can with our limited resources to try to compete for grants. Unfortunately, for this last round through a grant program that we were eligible for, it was very oversubscribed and we weren't successful. Typically, we're seeing those funds, you know, better or worse, going to population centers. So you see the LAs and the Bay Areas and the urban areas, you know, getting the lion's share of those funds. So that's the scale of some of the projects we're looking at, and then in terms of the local dollars. This council, I think, challenged staff over the last year or so to really look at how we do our local road repair program, and we found some ways we can accelerate the work and allocate some more dollars to those projects, and we're doing that currently. The question wasn't raised, but I'll add that if the $2.1 million was available from the local bucket, staff would likely come back to you and recommend that we simply accelerate our local road repair program. Certainly, if there was an opportunity to match funds or go after grants, we would do that, but those dollars could advance that five-year plan and put more projects in the queue sooner, essentially.
I had a question. Hang on, Chris, let me go ahead. I've always favored no-do taxes and live within our means, essentially. You know, we're now at 8 3/4. But with this half cent that would be generated, that $35 million, the only advantage I really see truly is what Mr. Hua just mentioned, is that a lot of our sales tax is going outside our county, not coming back to Paso Robles or any of the other seven cities and county here in San Luis. So what I'm wondering about is, you know, the $35 million is one thing, but the leveraging. And like we saw, for instance, in Santa Barbara County, $1.2 billion, how would that be allocated? What's the thought about, would it be the same generation of percentages here that you're talking about with the $35 million, or would it be on a project basis?
It's on a project and application basis. So I'll give you two examples. So let's say hypothetically that the city of Paso Robles wanted to put in a bike, pedestrian, something, right? You could apply for grants, use your local funds, and you could leverage that. So that's up to you. On the regional side, if you've already completed your environmental and you completed your planning and all those other pieces, you've got a cost, you can then take a percentage and then leverage those larger dollars for the actual build and construction for major infrastructure like 10146 and the bridge flyover. What you do on the local basis is completely up to the city itself and your staff to look and see what grants might be available. When you look at grants in terms of local road maintenance, there are very few out there that address that. However, safe routes to schools, things that relate to Vision Zero or safety programs, the state and the feds, especially the state, have been awarding hundreds of thousands of dollars for that, and you can leverage that with your local funds.
I see, but that's kind of what I've seen in the past where, you know, when we get grants from the state, there's so many strings attached on how it can be used. I must imagine that's how this extra money coming from a self-help capacity would still...
That's one of the reasons we changed the way that it's written. The original